All right, I guess we'll get started. There's still some people filtering in, but we sort of feel like we're time crunched anyway, so we're gonna just get going here. Welcome everybody. We're here to talk about search-driven development with SharePoint. My name is Paul Summers. I'm a business productivity architect at the MTC in Boston. I used to be a consultant in MCS at Microsoft and came over from the FAST organization.
Dan Benson, senior consultant for Microsoft Consulting Services, and we realize it's a little dark in here, so if you feel yourself slipping into a food coma, keep the snoring to a minimum.
We want to welcome your questions. Make sure you use the mic, and you know we'll just try to cover the content and balance questions. If we can't get to anything, we'll try and we'll be around after the show. Just to level set a little bit, we want to make sure you guys are all in the right room and understand what our session is going to be about, and give you time to scatter out if you really want to. What this presentation is going to focus on is how we can embed search into our applications, because we believe that search is really powerful, and there's a lot of dynamic things and personalization you can do with search. And with the REST APIs and the JavaScript APIs, we can leverage search across any device and any platform. And ultimately, we want to show you or give you a set of tools, a jump start into using search to build really personalized and contextual experiences. Ultimately, we want to elevate the way you're using search. We want you to do more with it. If you're hoping to learn how to access the Project Oslo APIs while you're here, unfortunately, we don't have that information. That was some really cool stuff, but unfortunately, I just learned about it yesterday, just like the rest of you. So we're going to talk a little bit about why we want to use search, what the advantages of using search, both sort of from an application architecture perspective, a little bit about some of the underlying physical architecture, so if you're using an on-prem solution, why you want to use search versus just using standard list lookups or database calls. We're going to talk to you about the different APIs that are available, when to use which ones, what the advantages of the different APIs are, and then a little bit about also what you need to do to get SharePoint configured to use different search features. So just, so why search? We want to explain to you what the benefits of using search are, how you can prepare SharePoint to satisfy those different end-user requirements that you might have, how to use the different APIs to consume search, and then how to leverage the advanced capabilities of search in your applications. So we're stepping outside of the text box and the 10 blue links. We want you to embed it in your applications and consume it and drive these really dynamic experiences and take advantage of all the cool features of search from any context. So for our presentation, we sort of teed up a fictitious scenario. We're Contoso Event Management Company, and we're struggling with the ability to manage events across our organization. So we have satellite offices and regional offices, and we have a corporate office that wants to have visibility in what everybody's doing. But we want to make sure that the regional and satellite offices can manage their own calendars, and then corporate and the various scopes can have visibility into what's going on in each office. So they might manage these calendars in separate site collections or maybe in external data sources, but for our purposes, separate site collections. And right now, they have to either have somebody go out to all these calendars and merge them into a master calendar, or they have to go out to or everybody has to go to a central resource to apply things to the central calendar. So we want to make sure that these satellite offices have control of their calendars, but we also want corporate to have visibility. So our solution is a search-driven solution, surprise, surprise, that rolls up the data, the calendar events, from all these calendars across our SharePoint farm or tenant. Our demo is going to be focused on SharePoint Online, and we're happy to address questions about the differences, and we'll talk some of that. But our data is going to roll up all the calendar events across the organization. And you can see from these screenshots that we are leveraging the advanced features of search. So not just the keyword query box, but also the refiners, the date filters, et cetera. So we're going to jump right into a quick demo. Dan? Oh, so sorry, to tee this up a little bit, Dan is going to, do you want to switch into the demo mode?
Sure.
So Dan's going to walk through his version of the app. What we've actually done is created two separate apps, SharePoint apps. So we've created these as SharePoint apps, but you can consume these APIs from any application you want. And as many of you as developers here probably know, not only can you consume them from external apps, but you could deploy provider-hosted SharePoint apps that consume these APIs using any platform. But what we've done is we've created an auto-hosted app and a SharePoint-hosted app, and it's allowing us to demonstrate two different APIs, so the CSUM, the .NET CSUM API using an auto-hosted app, and the JavaScript and REST APIs using a SharePoint-hosted app.
Okay, thanks, Paul. So I'm just basically going to show you the auto-hosted app using ASP.NET and the CSOM object model. As you saw from the slide before, we've basically created the same app, but we're going to go into how you can do it different ways based on preference or any other technology considerations. So what we've done basically here, just to dive right into the app, is to basically give you the calendar roll-up, just walking through some of the features here. At the top right, you see we have a selection of office or all. So I'm just coming into this app. I'm a particular user, and it happens to know something about me, and it's filtering the results just based on my office, things I might be interested in. Now, I can just click and show all the events company-wide and be able to start to filter down from there on what I'm interested in. So a couple of things you can do here, date filter. So I can just select those, and it's going to change my result set. The refiners we talked about, office, company, you can dig in a little bit further to what you want to see there. And finally, down to the exact item you want. And then obviously, not to be left out, keyword query. So if you know something about the event, title, description, any of the fields that are indexed, you can just type in a query there. So that is the auto-hosted app.
And so if I just pivot into the SharePoint-hosted app, so you can see it's very similar. We used very similar style sheets and stuff, but we want to differentiate them a little. So Dan's has slightly different colors than mine, although I think it's harder to distinguish on the big screen. But you can see this is a SharePoint-hosted app, all the same features, you know, the date filter and the refiners, the personalization, all that stuff. So that actually didn't change because my office is Boston, so the personalization element was just filtering into Boston, so the same events applied. So that's what we built, and that's the solution to address Contoso Event Management's challenge about rolling up the calendars. And to be frank, this is a scenario that's been presented to me by a number of customers, including my own organization, MTC. We have this whole calendar issue across our groups, and it would be nice to have some sort of centralized view of what's going on across our offices. So we'll hop out of demo mode here. So let's talk about why we went into search, why we chose search as the approach for our app to solve this problem for Contoso event management. There's this balance, and we see it a lot with search, this balance of our content owners want to own content, they want to control the content, they want this autonomous control of their own data. But the corporation wants visibility into all this data. And I jokingly put the autonomy thing up there because autonomy happens to be one of our search competitors. But the word was very succinct, in my opinion, about the requirement, the reasons for using search. So while we are talking about calendars and, you know, different offices who want to own their own calendar and manage their own data, this could be line of business applications that want to own their own data and manage their own data yet the whole organization wants visibility into it. So they bubble that up through search. So to extend this conversation a little bit about why search, so what does search do with SharePoint? For one thing, it consumes content across your entire farm, right? So it's when we're talking about on-prem solutions, and we're not going to dive into the hybrid conversation about, you know, how do I get my on-prem data into the cloud, but for on-prem solutions, you know, we can crawl line of business data, and we can consolidate it into this in single search index. And it allows us to focus on the quality of the content, not this complicated information architecture. And we can focus on building strong user experiences that pivot and dive into the data in the different ways that, you know, surface the data in the most relevant way for our users. So we can really focus on producing high quality data and let search bubble it up to the right, into the right places. The other thing is scale and performance. I mean, search is optimized to deliver content. You know, there's, when we talk about accessing lists and database calls, you know, those have a lot of other elements that they're designed to accommodate, you know, the atomic transaction, all those things, but search is really focused on delivering content. So if you're able to leverage it to deliver content to your users, the scale and performance is in your favor. And actually, you can see with this app, I've been actually really impressed. I mean, these are deployed into SharePoint Online, you know, my personal demo tenant, but it's really slick. It's really fast calling those APIs and delivering that data. So what did our solution design look like? And why did we, you know, why did we make the design decisions that we made? Well, we thought using a SharePoint app made sense. It's a SharePoint conference, so we thought we'd kind of keep a couple of things in play here. So hopefully you'll learn something about app development as well as the search part. But we wanted to play with the two different APIs. So the REST API called from JavaScript. What features does that expose? How do we access the different features of search, refiners, sort? What does that whole thing look like? And the same with the CSOM. So if your organization has a high, you know, if you focus on provider or auto-hosted apps using the .NET platform, this is going to expose to you, we're going to give you some hints about how to consume that API. I see a question right here.
John?
Yeah, it's not good.
Hey, excellent. If you really wanted to, could you use the same kind of thing without the app? I mean, you could use the APIs inside of a page to pull information.
Absolutely. That's a great question. And that's something we want to emphasize here, that we use the SharePoint hosted apps, again, because I want, you know, it's a good time to, you know, plug that model, right? But if you have, say, PHP applications, standalone PHP applications, standalone Java applications, whatever your platform might be, you can consume these APIs. So obviously the .NET CSUM only applies to standalone .NET apps, but the REST and JavaScript, you know, that applies to any platform and you can consume them. There's an identity thing in there, right? You have to do some OAuth exchanges, but and using the provider and auto host and SharePoint hosted app, or the auto hosted and SharePoint hosted app actually simplifies a lot of that for you, and we'll dive into that. But yes, you can definitely consume it from any application. Last SBC, Dan and I consumed the search APIs from a Windows 8 app. And you saw that with the Project Oslo stuff. You know, that's accessing those APIs from Windows 8 apps. But you can see, so we've built these apps on top of search, which is consuming this calendar data and exposing it through search. So it's consolidating this information that might be distributed across a large SharePoint farm. You know, for ours, we have like three different site collections with three different calendars with dummy data. But you can imagine the scope that you could drive that towards. So again, to talk a little bit about the app model. So what app did we want to use? This is a decision point on your that you have to weigh within the constraints of your organization, really. Do you want to use a SharePoint hosted app? You know, is that just an easier model? Do you have a lot of investment in standalone, you know, in the .NET platform? Or maybe you're just a Java shop and you love SharePoint search, and so you want to consume it. So you have those choices, and we can address some of the questions about the app model, but you know, we're really here to focus on the search part of it. So let's talk about our application architecture for this app that we built. It's sort of a classic, it's a pretty simple classic design, right? We have our user interface tier, we have an application logic tier, and then we have a data model and the data access tier. Traditionally, that bottom layer where it says SharePoint search is going to be a database, maybe a list, lookup. But we want to kind of ask people to think differently. Start using, make your data store, at least from a content delivery perspective, make your data store search. And just build your data model on top of search. I'm going to show you how we did that. So for the SharePoint hosted app, just to dive in a little bit of the details, so that top tier, that display tier, is raw HTML plus knockout.js. So I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with knockout.js, but it's a really, I was really excited to find it. It's a really cool, MVVM framework, model view, view model framework, so that we can do this kind of seamless data binding and really separate our UI experience or our UI development from our app logic. That app logic is implemented in JavaScript. So we have a core app.js file, which we'll show you. And then that data access tier is JavaScript plus the REST API. And one thing we're going to show you and talk about is in the code demos is that the SharePoint JavaScript object model doesn't offer us a lot of structured hooks in the search. So we've built a wrapper around the REST API to do that for us. Built on some of the classic, the classic objects that we are accustomed to as search people to consume the search services.
And so for the auto-hosted app, again, we mentioned we use the CSOM API, and it's hosted in Azure. And similarly to the last slide, we're using standard ASPX HTML for the display, for the UI. We're using CodeBehind, which we're going to dive into, to make the actual search calls. And then once we get the data back from search, we're going to massage the data a little bit so that we're able to use your standard ASP.NET binding controls like a list, a data grid, a repeater. So again, built on top of SharePoint search. So what we wanted to do, and you'll notice that each demo is going to dive a little bit deeper into the code and how we got there. So we started with the demo of the UI, and now we're just going to jump into the sort of code artifacts, the top-level things that we use to be able to get there. And in case you're wondering, this is Visual Studio, and this is a 400-level session, so we are going to get into code. So, the first things first, I open up Visual Studio, and it actually makes us very easy to be able to create a SharePoint-hosted or auto-hosted app. So, just to show you a quick demo of how that's done, we just create File, New Project, we select our Office SharePoint, and then Apps. And at that point, you just select an app for SharePoint. And as soon as I click OK, it's going to ask me whether I want SharePoint hosted, auto hosted, or provider hosted. And since I chose auto hosted, what that gives me in the solution is actually two projects. The first project is the project that's basically responsible for the configuration of the actual SharePoint app. And the one interesting file in this is the app manifest. So if I open that, you'll be able to see some top-level properties here. Just the name and title of the app. You can see that the hosting type for this particular app is auto-hosted. Also, if you go over to the permissions tab, once we deploy the app, we need to tell SharePoint what permissions that this particular app has, and then we can choose to trust it or not. So for this particular calendar app that we've written, we've chosen to give search a query permissions, and then for the personalization part, which we'll talk about later, we have given user profiles permission to read. We're not doing any updating there. We're just consuming it. So that's the first project you get. The second one should look pretty familiar to any ASP.NET developers. This is just a basic ASP.NET website, which is going to be deployed. So just walking through, again, the top-level things we have here, one of the things I wanted to point out was the references. So like you saw in the app manifest, the two important ones here that we're using to make the functionality work is the search and user profile DLLs. And once you reference these, it's important to make sure that you set copy equal to true so that when you deploy it, it has the references available in the cloud. And moving on, we have our content folder, which is basically just the app.css file. And initially when we started, Paul and I had the same app.css file. And just for the purposes of this presentation, we changed some colors and diverged just a bit so you were able to identify which one you were looking at. The UI lightness is just a jQuery UI for we're actually using the same calendar control. Next, we move into the models. And so we've created two basic models here for to be able to display the data and bind the data in the background. And that's the team event result, which is the search results you saw with the actual calendar items and date. And then the team event refiner, which is the refiners you saw over there on the right of the demo. And these will be important as we move forward, showing you how we consume the data from search, massage it a little bit, and then bind it to our final page. So then it's pretty simple from there. We've got default.aspx, just a bit of formatting there, your standard, and I'll be zooming in on this, so if you're wondering if you can't see it when we dive deeper, I'll be zooming in. So the default.aspx just has your standard user controls, text box, repeaters, radio buttons. And then default.aspx.c# is where we go into the primary code artifacts that enable us to talk to search and consume the results, as well as talk to the user profile service and consume those results. The rest of this basically is just some script references. Two very important classes here at the end, SharePoint context and token helper. These are beautiful artifacts that we get when we create that project. And what this does is isolate us from having to make HTTP calls and worry about the SharePoint context. So it handles all of that for you. Just using the CSOM API, you just say, I want a query, you set some properties, and you make a client request. And this is all taken care in this class. And then the token helper, as Paul mentioned earlier, just deals with all of the OAuth negotiations. So we don't even have to worry about that. We can focus on our application logic and move forward pretty quickly with an app. And then finally, just the web.config, which has a couple things that we'll talk about. Nothing big there.
So I'll show you the AutoHost app as well. It's a similar set of code artifacts that you saw with Dan, which shows you sort of the parity that we're observing with these two different app models. But really, there's five key files. The app manifest, again, it looks exactly the same, except mine is set to be SharePoint hosted. Again, I've asked for the same permissions that Dan just showed you as well. The default.aspx file, so a lot of these files are created automatically when I instantiate this project in Visual Studio. Default.aspx, you know, this is our front-end code. And, you know, the core markup, the visual markup, was only like 50 lines of code. It's using the knockout.js libraries really simplified that data binding and allowed us to really focus on the UI. And for, you know, as you're developing apps with your designers, it gives them a lot of power to, you know, get really creative within their HTML to build the right user experiences and not worry about, you know, how that's going to interface with your application code. Again, so the app.js file, this is my core JavaScript application logic code. Knockout.js is centered around the notion of a view model, and so my view model is all defined in here, the properties, and we'll go into that. I have an app.css file, so that's the styles. And then this spsearch.js, so this is the wrapper I've built around the REST API. use it with JavaScript objects, and you'll notice that it mirrors the objects that Dan has created quite closely. And we'll talk about the differences as we dive into it, but you know, there's really five objects in there. And they represent the object model for the features that we've enabled in the app itself. Switch out of demo mode here. We'll go back to a few more slides. We also want to talk about the SharePoint configuration, because that's a big piece of getting your features enabled, no matter where you're consuming search from, what kind of app you're consuming it from. So what did we have to do to enable our app? Well, we had these four key things. We created a custom content type, and we assigned custom properties to that content type. Things like the event location, the customer name, the office where the event was being hosted out of. And one of the things I learned working with SharePoint Online is that you can't create a content type hub in just any old site collection within SharePoint Online, but SharePoint Online gives you this default content type hub. So your tenantname.sharepoint.com/site/content-type-hubs. If you go to that URL on your tenant, you'll get this content type hub, so you can create content types that you can publish across your tenant. And you don't see it listed in your tenant admin site collection list, so it's sort of hidden. In addition to that, we had to manage metadata. You know, we wanted to drive some ensure consistency with some of our data, things like the office location, and the regional, office location, event region, and then event category. You know, some of this data we didn't actually end up using, but we, in our front end, but we enabled it with using managed metadata. Then we configured a result source. And if you're new to SharePoint search, a result source is this ability to sort of define a general search profile. Actually, in the fast days, that's what we used to call it, as a search profile, with some pre-configured query properties. And so our result source automatically does a filter for content type equal to team events, so the name of my content type. And what I'm allowed to do then is just reference in my queries, in my search calls, reference this content, this result source by a GUID. And when I do that, it automatically applies this background query. So I don't have to know anything about how I'm filtering that data on the back end. All I need to know is that my result source is going to allow me to just focus on that subset of my search data. And then if something changes about that subset of your data, you know, maybe you actually want to narrow it down to a specific set of events in a specific time range or whatever the case may be, I can then go in and modify that result source in the back end. The application doesn't have to worry about it at all. All it needs to do is say, I trust that this result source is the focus of my data, and I will always query against that to start. The final thing we had to do was configure some managed properties. And the challenge with managed properties in SharePoint Online is that we don't have as much control over them. So SharePoint on-prem, I create a managed property, and I can, you know, set the different attributes of that managed property. Do I want it to be displayed? Do I want it to be queryable? Do I want it part of the full text index? Do I want to enable refinement and sorting on it? In SharePoint Online, we don't have that control. In SharePoint Online, what we actually have to do is map our custom crawled properties to pre-configured managed properties in SharePoint Online. Just go to that slide to give you a little bit of visibility. Hopefully you can see that okay. But if you go into your tenant on SharePoint Online, go to search, and then go to manage search schema, and if you just type in REFIN into that search box, it'll give you a list of these pre-configured refinable properties. Similarly with sort, if you need a sortable property, you're going to get, do a search for sort, and it'll return all the sortable properties. So the data is there, or the configuration is there, the features are there. We just need to map our custom data into those properties. So for instance, the event location. I had to, that property was automatically crawled The crawled property was automatically created, and there was actually a managed property automatically created for it. But that managed property only had two attributes set on it. They were queryable and display. So I knew I could render it in my search results. I knew I could search against that managed property, but I wanted to refine on it. So I figured out what the crawled property was. You know, you have to kind of be clever and go in and search for it. The link I put on that previous slide, actually, so that link right there on the bottom underneath managed properties is kind of a hint to how the managed properties are automatically named in SharePoint. So if you're not familiar with that, you can go out there. But once I found my crawled property, I captured that name, and then I just found one of my refinable, these out-of-the-box pre-configured refinable managed properties, and I added my crawled property, or I mapped my crawled property to that one of those managed properties. And now I have a refinement on that. The downside to that is that, you know, we don't have the automatic name, so when I get it back, I have to do some name mapping or use an alias. But overall, the features are there with SharePoint Online. We just have to work within the constraints of that environment. So that's how we set up search. That's how we set up search on our tenant. And that applies, you know, those general practices apply to your on-prem solution if that's what you're using as well. You just have a little bit more control in that environment than you do with SharePoint Online. So as we discussed before, or I mentioned before, there isn't really a true object model, JavaScript client-side object model for search. Really, you just have to make requests to the REST endpoint. So I wanted, in order to simplify my application logic, I wanted to build an object model of my own. And so these are the five core classes that I created. And to the right, on the right of the slide there, is the structure of the REST, of the JSON response that comes back from the REST API. And these objects are kind of the objects that we've created here. So it doesn't capture all the features that search. Like, we don't capture extra result blocks or secondary results within our object model. We could. We can enhance it quite easily. We just didn't enable those features in our apps. But the rest of it is sort of the classic object model for a search solution. So we're leaning back on our fast days when we had these full-featured .NET and Java libraries for search. So we have a query object, which encapsulates the query parameters that we're submitting to the search engine. We have a search results object that encapsulates the response from that query. You know, a search result is an individually rendered search result. And then the search refiner, you know, is the refiner object plus the refinement items, so the individual refinement items that we click on. So it's not really visible here, but they're all actually, the bottom three objects are embedded in that that search results object. And again, we'll show you that in the code in a few minutes.
So the next one, covering the CSOM search object model, there's one main namespace and two main classes that we're dealing with here. And the keyword query is how we actually talk to search. And it's a pretty well-defined object, and we're able to set all the properties that we can, dive into that. But where it lacks just a little bit, and we're going to show you how we overcame that, is the results come back in just a result table collection. And so that's why we built custom models, and we don't have something we can just bind right to an ASP.NET control. So we had to sort of overcome one of the shortcomings, which is you have to know, for example, that the search results are in table 0 and the refiners are in table 1. So that's basically the two major classes we're using, and then the two models that we built to be able to display the two parts of our search results. So how did we get there? Well, the first thing we want to show you is, I mentioned in our code behind page, default.aspx.cs, we have two main functions in here. One is search, and the other is our event handler for the user input. So, familiar event handler here, when the page loads up, we just want to call search with a wildcard, make sure that when someone goes to our page, we're not showing them nothing. So we just call search. Now, coming back to how we actually pass the parameters, just going to our event handler here, I've just basically stuffed everything into a submit event handler, and that handles whether the user types in the query box, they click a refiner, we just extract the information for that refinement value, or whether they set a start and end date. Pretty simple there. So now, getting into the search part, how do we talk to search? Let me zoom in for you here. So, mentioned the keyword query class. That's where we're going to build our query that talks, using the CSOM API, that talks to the actual search engine. And what we have here, basically, we just create and instantiate a new keyword query object, and we're going to set whatever information on page load, it was just star, but from the submit event handler, we might have some more information as we've built up our query string. We're going to set that as a query text property. Next, the selected properties section. That's basically you're telling the search engine what information you want back. So you don't want everything back. You don't want a huge payload of a bunch of stuff. We just want the information that we're going to display using our app. The sort list. That's basically how we want the information sorted on our page. We've chosen our start date, which is also coming back, and just the sort direction there is descending. The next is the refiners. So as Paul was mentioning in a couple slides ago, we have to overcome sort of mapping our crawled properties to existing managed properties with refinement enabled on them. So he mapped office and company to refinable string 3 and refinable string 4. So this property allows us to tell the search engine that we want back these particular refiners. The refinement filters property is actually how we're going to pare down the search results. So anything that was clicked on underneath company or office is actually going to be added to that so that we can drill down on our search results. He mentioned results source, so we're just going to set that. And then it's pretty simple. You just call a client result using the search executor and basically execute the query. That's going to give us the result table collection. And we'll show you how once the results come back, we built them to be able to display in our app. So this looks pretty simple right here. We've got our result table collection. But we need to massage the data a little bit to be able to display it how we want. So jumping into the search results section, we have basically just created a class that holds the title description and event date. And what we had to do here to be able to create the experience that we wanted was just parse different parts out of the date so that you have the actual date, the month, and the day of week, whatever else we showed. And on my particular app, you also have the time. So in our constructor, we're just going to take the table at position 0 in our result table collection, that's the search results, and just map it to our properties, just using standard date time parsing. The next one is building the refiners. So once we've bound the results, we're going to bind the refiners, and that's where it gets a little interesting. So what we had to do here, the way that the information comes back in the data table, it's just key value pairs. And I wanted to show you a slight difference versus the REST API. Excuse me. So in the REST API, you'll notice that our refiners are coming back and the name of the actual refiner, the refiner category, is nested in the refiner element so that we have implied hierarchy there. The way it comes back in the CSOM is basically name value pairs. So we needed to look at the refiner category and build a structure that would be conducive to being able to display that hierarchy on the page. So what we're doing here is, well, the first thing we do is we're opening web.config because we want to, that's just where we map refinable string 3 to, say, office and refinable string 4 to company. So as we dive into this, we're just going to loop through the rows in that table, and if we've seen the refiner category, we're going to add it to our object, which is a dictionary that's basically the category as a string, and then the other properties of the refiner as a list, so that we're able to say Boston, San Francisco, Los Angeles. So that's the list. So what we do is we just loop through standard, if the item exists, add it. If it doesn't exist, I'm sorry, add it to the list that already has the dictionary key. If it doesn't exist, we're going to add the key and the list item. A little bit of parsing the actual values that come back. As Paul mentioned, using managed metadata and the existing framework in SharePoint Online, we get some strings with vertical bars and GUIDs in there. Excuse me. Hope I didn't blow your ears out. So that's just all that starts with businesses. So now we have our dictionary built that is just a string and a list of event refiners. We bind that to our data source. The search results one is actually pretty straightforward. It's just a repeater that we go into and pick out the different properties of our search result item, day of month, year, etc. But the refiner is actually a little more interesting. Given that we have hierarchy, we needed to be able to maintain that so that you have office location, Boston, San Francisco, whatever the locations are. So we've used a nested repeater. And the first level of that repeater actually binds the first element of the dictionary. So it binds using the data item to the key of that dictionary, being the refinement category. And then the second part, binds to the actual list, the value of that dictionary, so that we're able to then pull out our refinement filter as well as the name to be able to display that on our page. So that's basically the important code pieces we needed. We created two models to be able to hold our data the way we wanted to present it, and had to do a little bit of massaging of the data there, and then we're just binding it to our standard repeater controls.
All right, so I'm going to do a similar walkthrough of the code using the SharePoint-hosted app. So I'm going to start on the front end versus the back end, like Dan, and show you, just quickly walk you through the default.aspx code. So I know this isn't I know this isn't a tutorial about knockout.js, but I did want to highlight some of how this data is actually getting rendered, and how some of the interaction with that application logic is happening. First of all, I have this data bind attribute of all these HTML elements is specific to knockout.js, and that's sort of where we dictate the behavior of those elements. And so this is an event handler. So we're saying if someone clicks, I'm going to call this run search click method. The focal point of knockout.js is this view model that represents sort of the state of the front end. And so this run search click is a method on that view model. Here is my search results rendering code, which I think is really cool that it's, 20 lines of code or whatever that is, 15 lines of code. And I'm able to render that entire result set just with this. Knockout.js has this attribute for each that allows me to loop through. The results is the search results in that view model object. And then I'm data binding to some of the attributes of each search result in these divs down here. The search filter pane over here, again, I'm assigning some event handlers here. So if I click on my office, it's going to call the run search method. If I click on all offices, it's going to call the run search method. And I have similar data binding with the start and end date control, as well as the refiners. So here's the link for the refiners. So this is a nested loop, just like Dan's code had for the refiners, for rendering the refiners. So I want to render each refiner object and then the refinement items within that. So it's a nested loop there. This root is a reference to the top level view model object. So as knockout.js loops through the different elements when it does the rendering, the default, if I had taken this root reference out, it would think I was calling refine results on the object, the current item object that's being rendered. But really, I want a reference to the parent view model object, so I call that root method. So that's the long and short of the knockout of the default.aspx. It, as you could see, it's very similar to Dan's code. So we're able to kind of, again, have this consistent, you know, the consistent application development model in other words, that development model shouldn't drive your decision. It should be more about your organization and how you guys operate. So hopping into the application logic code here, first of all, I'll just call out really quickly, we're going to dive into it, but this is that view model that I was talking about. And it has attributes on it that represent, that reflect the state on that front end. So the real important ones are this, the search text coming from the search box. This self.personalize is the radio buttons that tell it whether to use the personalized view of my office versus all offices. The start and end date filters, the results, self.results, we talked about how that is part of that for each loop. The refiners and that nested loop. So that's all in there. We're going to hop back into that. But I want to go actually to the top of this code and call out a few things that are quite interesting about developing JavaScript-based applications, SharePoint-hosted apps in SharePoint, obviously. SharePoint-hosted apps with search. So you can see on the bottom there, I've got this, the requestexecutor.js. That code is meant to abstract a lot of the complexities of cross-domain calls, cross-domain policies. So traditionally, if I'm making a call, a list lookup, or any call into my SharePoint, into SharePoint from a SharePoint-hosted app, I'm making a cross-domain request, right? Because the app has its own domain, whatever it is, you know, guid.pulsum.guid-guid.sharepoint.com into tenant.sharepoint.com. But because the search service is part of that tenant or that farm, I can make requests to the search service directly within that app domain, so within the app web. So my requests into search are actually, I take the app web URL, which I have parsed out up here, and that becomes the domain for my REST endpoint. I'll show you that as we get into the query code. But the point here is that if you're just using search, you don't have to worry about cross-domain policies for a SharePoint-hosted app. This request executor is only included because I'm using the user profile service. If I wasn't using the user profile service as part of my code, I wouldn't have to have that in there at all. So it's kind of, again, it's a little bit of a shortcut. It's a shortcut about how can I use search and simplify my application architecture. I don't have to worry about cross-domain policies there. So if I go back down into the view model, I just will talk about the key components of this. So here is the this run search method is our primary method for making search requests. I have some onload method that calls that run default search, and so that something is displayed to the user when they first open the app. But everything else is going to call run search. And what run search first does is calls another method called build query. And this is a method that is part of the view model object. And it's going to capture all the data from the front end and build this query object, this customized query object that I've built in that spsearch.js file, and assign the attributes that it's captured from the front end. So you can see, here's where I assign the app web, which dictates where I'm making my REST call to. The result source, which I've actually set as a separate variable in this JS code. The select properties, the refiners, the sort field, I'm assigning all of that to this query object. So let's go look at that query object and see exactly what it looks like. This query object is meant to reflect the properties that are exposed to us in the REST API. So things like the query text, the source ID, the sort fields, the select properties, all of these things. I've added a few others that I'm not really using, but I did so primarily to demonstrate that we've built this object model to reflect the capabilities that are exposed on the, in the REST API.
It actually kind of looks like the CSOM API.
It does indeed.
Oh.
but that's the goal, right? We want to make this all kind of look consistent. So if I go back to this run search method, now that I've built my query object, I have a handle on it. It has a method called run search, which passes in two functions that will be two callback functions that will be executed depending on the success or the failure of the search call. So this is the run search method within that query object. So again, I had my view model. I called a run search. I built a query object within my view model that reflected the properties from the front end. Now I have a handle on this query object, and I'm calling the run search method on that query object, which is where the real meat of the search call is done. So I'm suffering from a little bit of using the same names across everything because I have another method called build query within my query object. But basically all that is doing is constructing the query parameters or the URL parameters for that REST call. So I'm capturing, I'm taking the attributes of this query object, like the source ID, the query text, and assigning them and building that request string that I'm going to ship off to the REST endpoint. One thing to highlight here, a little tidbit to take away that stumped me a little bit at first, was the refinement filters section. The refinement filters parameter is the, if somebody clicks on a refiner, you apply that refiner to the search request using the refinement filters parameter of the REST call. If you do it once, if you have one refinement filter, you're not going to notice this. But if you have two, you're going to realize you need to have valid FQL in that expression or in that value in order for the search to succeed. So the first time I did it, I said, you know, I thought I could just use a KQL expression. I said, you know, office : Boston, company : State Street Bank or whatever the case was. And that was failing. It worked when I just did office location, the location variable, but it didn't. But as soon as I added another one, it broke. I said, but what's going on? And if you read the letter of the law on TechNet, you will see that it has to be valid FQL. And I didn't believe it. So we have to make sure that's a valid FQL expression. What's really cool about that is that then we have the full power of FQL to allow refiners to drive our experience however we want. So in previous iterations, you know, back in the fast days, we only really supported the notion of anding our refiners. So, you know, if I clicked on one, it filtered in. I clicked on another, it then filtered that result set down. They were compounding in that sense. But we could have an or scenario. So if I said I could do location Boston or location Chicago. And so we have a lot of flexibility there. I mean, there's a user experience conversation to have when you start enabling these, but we do have that flexibility and that control. So we've built this query string, the query parameter string that we're going to ship off to the REST API. So now I'm going to build my search, the URL. Again, I'm using the app web URL. I talked about that a second ago. I'm not calling the host web. I'm calling the app web because they both have access to the same search service. The only constraints are that our security. So security trimming is still going to be applied based on who the user is executing the call. But otherwise, I have full access to that search service, including the result sources that I've defined at the tenant level. So I just make a traditional jQuery AJAX call. Right? I'm not doing anything special here. I'm not using the request executor. I'm just making a traditional AJAX call. And so if I get a successful call, I'm going to instantiate my results object, and I'm going to parse that out. So let's hop in there. So the results object has a few methods to construct this data model that we want to use to data bind to the front end, similar to Dan's. First of all, we want to parse out the results. Let me just quickly show you what the result object itself looks like. This is a very simple object, right? Just the attributes that we know we want to render on the front end are represented in this result object. And so I build a collection of those by looping through the search results that come back from the front end. Try not to scroll too much here, but what's really cool is when I make that AJAX call, it gives me a fully formed JSON object, and so I can reference the different structures of that JSON object using the named structure there, versus Dan has to reference sort of this table and kind of guess, so is it table 0, table 1? I actually can just reference it by name, so it's sort of relaxed in that sense. Now, I do have to loop through each result to assign the values to my result object. What's key here is that looping, that processing should be optimized if we're using the select properties. So we use the select properties to tell the search engine exactly which properties we want returned, and that's important both from this aspect. So when I'm looping through the data and building this model object that I'm going to render on my front end, it's also important in order to optimize the payload of search. Too often, we see these really high-performing search architectures underperform at the application level because we're not optimizing those requests. So it's important to only request the items that the attributes of the search result that you need. So similarly, I'm going to loop through the refiners and build the refiner objects here. Just very similar to Dan's, I have to take into account the way the managed metadata fields are returned, and I want to make sure I get a friendly display value out of those refinement items that come back from the front end, or come back from the search service. And so then I'm using AJAX. I passed in, so if I go back to the actual run search method on my query object, I've taken the response, I've turned it into a more well-defined object model, and now I'm passing that back into the callback function that I originally passed in. And I go back to my app.js, and I just assign it to these elements on the view model, and knockout.js does its magic for me, and it's all done.
Just giving you an opportunity to talk to these nice folks. I've been blocking you.
Thanks. So that's that. I don't know if anybody has any questions about what Dan showed or what I showed. Someone in the back here.
I would like to say that this is great and this is exactly what we are looking for, but we have a challenge. We are more of a product team who develops apps, so we want to develop a content type which should be provisioned using AppWeb, and we'll have a list in AppWeb. What we are not really sure about is how to provision refiners and how to provision managed properties when we are developing apps.
So you're trying to, how do you approach refiners when you're developing apps?
Yes.
In what sense?
So in order to leverage this particular demo, and I'm creating a custom event content type, it provisions a list as soon as the app web is created, which resides in app web. And now I want to define refiners for lists in that app web as well as managed properties.
So your app is creating the list?
Yes.
So you don't know the name of the
No. The
refiners? I don't have an answer for that one.
See me after.
So by default, those you're going to get managed properties from that, right? But there is,
we are going to get
as far as I know, there's no way to define, at least in SharePoint Online, there's no way to define that to manipulate the managed properties to support refinement.
Okay, thank you.
So we have about 15 minutes left in the session, and there's only a couple slides, about 5 minutes to go, so I don't know if we want to cover that and jump back to questions, or
sure.
If for because you got tips and tricks.
Okay, so just a few tips and tricks that we kind of covered. First of all, the valid FQL, if you're using that refinement filters with the REST API, make sure it's valid FQL. Secondly, if you have a managed property that's based on managed metadata, you have to do some manipulation of that in order to get something that's that will be display friendly. Last, performance-wise, use select properties, use the row limit parameters, whether using the CSOM or the REST APIs, in order to optimize your search payload. We don't want your application searched. We don't want search to look bad because you didn't write your application code well. So the last thing we were going to cover is talking a little bit about personalization. Search is really cool, the refinement, we've seen all that. But how do we take it a little bit of a step further? And that's with personalization. Search can consume any of these attributes that you want to provide more relevant results to the user, whether it's physical location that you pass in through your device, personal attributes, so any attribute that's part of your user profile in SharePoint can be accessed and applied to search, to your search queries, or your app context, the type of device you're using, where you are in the application, the type of content you're looking at, that can all be input into search. And we do that by combining those attributes with the query language, so whether you're using FQL, Fast Query Language, or KQL, the Keyword Query Language, we combine those attributes into those customized search queries to provide these much more powerful and relevant user experiences that our users are looking for. I mean, that's what I hear all the time, is we want a personalized site. We want a personalized experience. This is the way to do it. So Dan is going to show you how we've done personalization in these apps.
Channel 2, please.
Roger that.
So just to, this is actually a pretty quick one, but just to show you how we got the Office and All capability working. So basically, I'm logged into Paul's SharePoint tenant as Alex. And Alex has particular properties that we're able to access. And if you go to his contact information, you can see that his office location is in Boston. So we're able to then, in the code, and this is the third block of the search call, using that user profiles DLL, we're able to grab Alex's, because we know who he is, he's logged in, we're able to grab his personal properties. And where we actually find his office location is in the user profile properties. So once we grab that property, we're able to then get the user profile properties SPS location. And that's actually where that office that I showed you is defined. So we're just going to, if that is actually defined because it's user editable, we're going to add that to the query string as refinable string 3, which was office, and just office location. So that's how we made the radio button all or office location work and added a little personalization to that.
Yeah, you saw in our app that we assigned user profile permissions to the app so that when that app is deployed, they have to accept that. Yeah.
That was actually just showing you again in the app manifest, you're defining that we want to be able to read the user profile properties. Good question.
All right, so we'll wrap it up here. So we just want to review what we talked about a little bit. We're here to, we're very passionate about search, we're passionate about the value it can bring to your applications. So we hope we've articulated that today. We talked through some of the configurations of SharePoint that you need to do. Again, there are some distinctions between SharePoint Online and SharePoint On-Prem. And if you have specific questions about that, feel free to throw them at us. But the net-net is you can do everything in both environments, except for the challenging question that this gentleman threw at me. So that auto-discoverability is a challenge. We showed you how to enrich your object models, your objects and your code to encapsulate and more concretely define the search objects. We showed you how to execute queries and process those results and build those objects, populate those objects. And then we finally wrapped it up by showing you some of this personalization, which is where search starts to really show, accelerate its value. I want to put up some awesome resources that we use a lot. The SharePoint 2013 search tool on Coplex. It's a standalone Windows application that allows you to query against your endpoints, test your queries, and it's really great for debugging and troubleshooting. Nadim, who built that query tool, has a great blog with a lot of search tips. Steve Peschka, if you've ever read his blog, there's tons of SharePoint stuff on it, but he has done a lot of put in a lot of search work there too. And then the Search Guys blog, which is something I actually contribute to, tips, tricks, articles, how-tos. Finally, some other search sessions that are going to be out there if you're interested. I'm actually not even sure which ones have. I guess only looks like there's only one other one that all of them are upcoming actually. So. If you want to see some other cool stuff about search, there's a lot of search focus. I think you guys probably gathered that yesterday. So there's a lot of content for search while we're here. And last, evaluations. I'm actually not sure what the, let me know what the good rating is. It is a 5.
Okay. If that's the case, 10s will work.
Yeah. So go out and evaluate us, and hopefully we got you the information you're looking for.
Thank you for coming.
Yes. And we'll take questions.
Now. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody?
Yeah, I have a question.
Let's see.
Go ahead.
So in my application, my list is using a managed metadata folksonomy column. How do you search a folksonomy managed metadata column?
You should be able to do so. We can show you the code. You should be able to just take. As a keyword search, so if you're just trying to search against the raw data in there, it should get parsed and included in your full text index. If you're doing a refinement, you can take the refinement, the filters that come back with the refinement values, and apply those directly, and it'll filter on that site
column. That means it's being crawled just as text.
Yes.
I mean, if I was using a managed metadata column, then search treats those columns as separate, but that's not the same case with the keywords managed metadata.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that then.
No, but I think, so the taxonomy, there's actually hidden fields and lists that get populated, and those actually end up as crawled and or managed properties. So you should be able to hook into those define refiners and whatever else.
You may have to look through your managed properties and make sure they're mapped to the full text index or to another managed property correctly.
And then once you get in there, you can obviously search it because that stuff might have more information than you're looking for, but it's generally separated. I forget what the default separator is, something like a semicolon. And you can still search it, or you can display it with some third-party tool like BA Insight or something and actually show it as a hierarchical refiner.
All right. So. You showed us how to develop the SharePoint hosted app. How do you deploy this?
I'm sorry?
How do you deploy this?
It's actually quite easy. From a debugging standpoint, I'm on 6. Let me just. So this is actually so if you're doing development, all you do is hit F5, and you specify the tenant. And
this has to be on. It doesn't need to be on the SharePoint server. The development can happen on my desktop.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. We don't have SharePoint running on our laptops. Okay. For the auto-hosted one, you just right-click on the first project that I had referenced earlier and hit deploy, and it just gets in the clouds.
The auto-hosted one is also something which gets hosted on the cloud, or is it anywhere?
Yeah, it's hosted in Azure. Yeah. It's an Azure website.
It's an Azure.net website.
I'm sorry.
An Azure.net page.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. But you can see Visual Studio for developing apps, it's so seamless and so easy to use. I right-click on my project, go to publish, and it does this page. I do package the app. It builds a .app file that represents my my app, and then I can just drag and drop it into my SharePoint environment. And I'm sure there's probably more sophisticated auto deployment methods, but it's quite easy.
Yeah, and that's actually something we didn't cover. A good point is once you have your app package there, you just go to your SharePoint site contents and add an app, and you just can browse to your app file and it'll.
So it's pretty much a WSP kind of package, but it doesn't deploy anything on the. You don't get the hard disk and all those things. You cannot go to the folders. You upload it to the SharePoint site, and it's inside the content database where it keeps all the pages and all those things.
I'm not entirely sure how all that stuff is stored, so we're not app experts. But for the SharePoint hosted app, remember it's just a collection of front end files,
yes.
Right?
So HTML, CSS.
It's just deploying into this app web, so it's kind of an isolated container in the app web. And all that's client-side code, so there's no risk to, it's not a WSP because it's not full trust code, right?
Right.
For the auto-hosted and same thing for provider-hosted, what you're deploying to SharePoint is really metadata about where the app lives, mm-hmm. and then the app itself is deployed into whatever environment. And for the case of auto-hosted, it's deployed in Azure and hosted in Azure. For provider-hosted, it can be hosted anywhere. Okay. You just need the pointer, basically, from SharePoint into that environment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So how extensive is the API support if we have to leverage the out-of-the-box usage reports and analytics feature for SharePoint? Like most of the search-driven applications will most likely not use the out-of-the-box SharePoint search results page. So if I do that, I get all the analytics for free without having to write a single line of code.
So it depends what kind of analytics you're looking for.
We'll start with whatever is available out of the box. If the search results were to be the native SharePoint out of the box search page,
so from
simple things like what was searched on, what was in among the search results, what was clicked on, mm-hmm. what was abandoned, and things such things.
So you're still going to have the same core metrics in the background, right? Because we're still consuming the centralized search service. So you're still going to have popular queries, zero result queries. For click events?
Yeah, regardless of whether I use REST or CSARM.
I'm sorry?
Regardless of the approach, or REST or CSARM.
Yeah, because those are the analytics. So popular queries, zero result queries, that data isn't triggered by what hits the front end. It's what hits the back end. So that data is harvested
from
there.
Is that a recent change? Because a couple of months ago, we engaged Microsoft support, and they clearly said that if your search page is hosted outside of SharePoint, we are currently not supporting any collection of usage reports.
What they might be referencing is the analytics engine. So the analytics engine inside SharePoint, which is what generates the views lifetime and the views recent and the recommendations data, that's correct. Those events, what we call them, are triggered, they're triggered by the UI. We can access them, though. Just be clear, can, not can't. We can access those through the JavaScript or through APIs. We have endpoints for those. So you can program that into your front end. So if I click on, if I do a search, I find an item I like, I click on it from a separate app, I have to fire a custom event into the SharePoint environment.
Yeah, referring to that. I mean, just the very basic search term, the fact that a search was issued against a search term, even that is not getting logged when I'm using CSARM or REST.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. It would surprise me. So I'll have to look into it.
Okay, all right, thanks.
The key answer. I'm sorry. Because there are some analytics that aren't captured. I mean, that's very true. But those core query analytics, they should be, they're harvested from, the search backend. So
you were talking about the SharePoint hosted apps and the auto hosted apps. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference when you're using provider hosted apps?
The key difference will be the authorization.
Okay.
And If you're using the JavaScript APIs, you'll have that cross-domain problem because you'll no longer be within the. I think you will. Yeah, because your domain will be totally separate outside of search.
Right.
I think so. You'll have that cross-domain problem if it's JavaScript. If it's CSUM, you have to deal with the OAuth exchange yourself. I don't know if the token helper classes will do
it
for you.
We're utilizing the S2S. type object model for, you know, because we're not utilizing Azure Active Control, the OAuth for Azure, so we're utilizing the high trusted apps. So is there, you know, have you?
I haven't. So I mean, the disclaimer is that I haven't done it, so I'm not entirely sure. I would, you know, there's probably a ton of app sessions here, so I would. Yeah. That's really more app specific. I'm sorry.
Okay. The next people are going to want to come up here. Just so you know.
Well, we still have time.
I know. But
sorry, go ahead.
Okay, just one more thing on the on-premises. I'm stuck on that one, I guess. But one question, with setting those permissions inside of an app, you have that capability. Is there that capability inside of on-premises? I mean, is there an easy way to do that?
So that deployment model is the same if it's on-prem or in the cloud. So you still need to configure your app to define what kind of permissions it needs. And when you deploy that app, whether it's on-prem or in the cloud, you need to accept that the app wants those permissions. So it's the same. So
you use the same app manifest. Can you add that into your on-prem, on-site solution?
Yeah, we chose to use SharePoint Online, but if I had had an on-prem environment with the app catalog enabled, we could have just pointed Visual Studio at that environment and done it there. Or I can take that .app package that I've created for this that I deploy into SharePoint Online and just drag and drop it into an on-prem environment.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. In SharePoint Online, you mentioned that there are some constraints regarding the managed properties, and I saw that there are only two data types available for new managed properties, a string and a Boolean, I think. Other data types are not supported, right?
Well, I know it's for string, numerics, date, and Boolean.
Okay.
So, I mean, remember, its core search is really, you know, it's having complex data types doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense the way the search engine works. So it's these basic data types that are most important.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for the session, guys.
Yeah.
A couple of questions. So on the refinement, what are the options as far as sorting goes? Prior to receiving the result set?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, traditionally I've done that manipulation on the back, kind of in the application code.
So after you've received the result set?
Yeah, but I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to look that up.
The reason I ask is kind of my second question as well. We're dealing with some pretty large data sets of hundreds of thousands of records. Does this, if we were to have search index a list like that and then set up search to access those content types, am I kind of bypassing the list view threshold issues with things
for
like
lookups?
That?
For lookups? Absolutely. And that's one of the cool things, I think, about using search is you bypass all of that.
Right.
And it's a really good way to search. Again, search is optimized for content delivery. And so, and you can get to the exact same data. You can, you know, present it so it's kind of transparent
right.
to the user.
Display
but yeah, that's a really good use case for search.
Cool. All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Given your comments about the need for setting up managed properties and content types or whatever, is there much opportunity for retrofitting or building a search application on top of an existing list? Or do you really have to start from scratch planning that you're going to have a search-driven app?
No, you can do it on top of an existing list. You'll have to pay attention to what's already enabled in terms of those managed properties. But if the list exists and you want to search it, you can. I mean, it's already being indexed and by default, most likely.
Right.
So you should be able to search it. The only question will be is it exposing the same data that I need? Traditionally, or do I need to configure some managed properties to surface that data?
Okay, and also, in a managed hybrid environment where you're doing federated search results, will that work? Can that work?
Will what work?
Well, the search application, because you know you get result blocks and what have you.
Yep.
Still
yeah,
works.
I mean,
okay.
you're pointing that client app at a result source, and whatever that result source is querying. It'll do it. So if it's going to the, it's
multiple
going to one of the hybrid sources, one of the federated sources. Yeah.
Excellent.
I mean, in my tenant, one of my on-prem tenants, I have Bing as a federated source, and I don't care what's behind that. I just know that I have my result source ID and I go at it. Now, the federated sources are going to support what they're going to support. So you do have some intricacies there, but.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello. My question will be about the, you know, the threshold that I haven't worked with the search API in JavaScript, but I've done, you know, server-side calls to that stuff. And in some scenarios, for example, if you want to return more than 50 rows, right, from the index, there is a problem, right? So, for example, if you want to return bigger set from index, how did you experience any of those issues with JavaScript? And if you did, how you did sort of
I didn't because I didn't try it.
Okay.
Traditionally, the way we approach that is through sort of more intelligent paging of the data and background calls. So I talked about that row limit parameter, so you can page through the data that way. And you can do that in the background, so it's transparent to your users.
Okay.
You can also, what we've done in the past is sort of filter data by different attributes that we know that we have kind of control over. So maybe it's a date attribute or some other metadata.
So you kind of pre-filter straight away. So it's return less data.
Yeah, so you can kind of step through those results versus trying to pull them. The search engine will suffer if you try to pull back humongous result sets. What that threshold is, I'm not sure. But yeah, you can run into performance problems with that, so you need to be careful.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'm going to step down and I can talk to you guys directly. I want to get off.